from the basement. We're here in a groove recording David Letterman episodes of your podcast, and then your wife comes home and starts doing laundry and throws off your flow. It's Daily Comedy News. Hi, I'm Johnny Mack. And on Saturdays in January, I am talking about Late Night with David Letterman, not talking about that imposter CBS version, not talking about the Netflix thing. Late Night with David Letterman turns 40 on February 1st. Vulture writes, from the very first seconds of that very first episode of Late Night with David Letterman, we are reminded just how different and daring Late Night was. The episode opens with Larry Bud Millman doing sort of an Alfred Hitchcock impression, saying, "We're about to unfold a show featuring David Letterman, a man of science, who sought to create a show after his own image without reckoning upon God. It's one of the strangest tales ever told." The New York Times wrote back then, "The program's overall mix often strains for the unpredictable. The post-Millman opening features a group of Rainbow Grill showgirl dancers in ridiculous peacock feather headdresses. Letterman emerges gap-toothed and bemused." Great description. Then, miraculously, everything essential is already in evidence, writes Vulture. The DNA of the show clearly discernible, the mannerisms, the intonations, the gratuitous shots at his corporate overlords, the unmistakable undertone of cantankerousness that suggests he might rip up the cue cards and stomp off the stage at any time. The first guest is Bill Murray, but the second guest is Don Herbert, a.k.a. Mr. Wizard, in what would become a trademark Letterman bit, one that both valorizes and sanitizes the tropes of classic broadcasting. Some highfalutin language there, Vulture. Letterman is the man who brought pet tricks back to TV and explicitly labeled them stupid pet tricks. This is not just Letterman announcing to the world that he's got a fresh take on TV. It's Letterman announcing that his fresh take on TV will be informed, above all, by the fact that he simultaneously loves television and finds it ridiculous. What's surprising is how surprising the rest of the first show still feels. The Melman opening is genuinely weird and startling. The Rec Room, can you believe they gave us a TV show decor, harkens to a time when actively undermining the artifice of TV still felt not just irreverent, but borderline seditious. Letterman had the singular advantage of never having had to follow himself. Every TV comedian who's come since has had to follow and reckon with Letterman, who from his very first hour established himself even more than the sainted Johnny Carson as TV's hardest ever act to follow. So that's kind of a big compliment to Conan O'Brien. I know Conan stumbled at first, but Conan definitely followed up Dave pretty well. How about the characters and sketches on Late Night with David Letterman? Chris Elliott in those early days crushed it. That first character that broke out, the guy who lived under the seats. The character, like most of Elliott's characters, would do a simple bit and then it would fall apart. Something would go wrong, Letterman would deliver a real or perceived slight, and then the guy under the seats would fly into a rage, and he or a dummy would invariably threaten to make Dave's life a living hell. Next Saturday, I'm going to do a deep dive on Chris Elliott. He was a vital piece of those early shows. Small Town News, often presented on Mondays, Letterman would present a series of actual news items, advertisements, and police blotter excerpts, which were shown to be unintentionally humorous. Letterman would precede the segment by asking the audience to please wait for the humorous comment, which consisted of him reciting a script follow-up to each news item. How about Stupid Pet Tricks / Stupid Human Tricks, one of the few segments that crossed over from Late Night to the CBS Imposter Show? Three pre-selected participants each demonstrate an unusual talent or stunt on the stage. Letterman reminds us this is not a competition. It is only an exhibition. Please, no wagering. New topic. Because of the creativity of staff writers like Meryl Marco, Letterman's NBC show in the first few years especially had innovative segments and theme shows that were new and different from other talk shows of the time. Some were visual gags. On one early episode, everything was shown from Dave's eye view, with Marco and others coming at Dave to pitch ideas as he walked onto the stage. The audience was shown from Dave's view during the monologue and the opening segments. I have posted that to the Facebook group page sometime in December. Scroll backwards, you'll find it. In another show, the picture turned like a clock, eventually being seen upside down halfway through. There were segments where Letterman dressed in a suit of Velcro and stuck thrown to a Velcro wall. How about a suit of chips dunked into a vat of chip dip? A suit of Rice Krispies doused with gallons of milk while he was lying in a huge bowl? A suit of Alka-Seltzer tablets got dunked in water? I think I saw that Steve Allen did, if not the same bit, a very similar bit when I was watching CNN's History of Late Night. Visual segments included things being crushed by a hydraulic press, which doesn't sound funny when I read it, was like the funniest thing you'd ever seen. How about things dropped off a five-story tower? That was actually my favorite segment of them all. Things thrown off the five-story tower, a bowling ball, a jello mold, a flaming bag of flour soaked in gasoline, a keg of nails, a frozen turkey attached to a parachute, and a roof-clearing finale for the ages. The final dropping segment included a bag of peat moss, a bowling ball on a trampoline, and a lawn ornament finale you won't want to miss. Fun with the hydraulic press included Mr. Potato Head, an athletic supporter, and a canned ham. How about squashing things with a steamroller, including bowling trophies, Paul Schaefer's glasses, and that last bit of toothpaste out of a tube? Or dropping a 3,000-pound block from a crane onto various items, including a football helmet full of Jell-O, cases full of gun caps, or a lovely mannequin couple having dinner. Letterman's desk featured a control panel where he could operate a bubble machine, radioactive steam, or strange lighting. When he threw his pencils through the fake window scene behind him, a sound effect of breaking glass was always heard. Occasionally, if sound effects technician Howard Vinitsky was slow in triggering the appropriate breaking glass sound effect, Dave would mockingly chide him for the error. A robotic arm for a while delivered the top 10 list, and for another week or so, a complicated series of tubes would produce swirling coffee to eventually land in his cup at the desk. Late night monkey cam, cameras mounted on a chimpanzee's back. I was at a recording one time where that went sideways and the chimp bit someone. They did not air that. There was a quick edit on the aired version, but I'm telling you, I was there. It happened. Roof cam. Things like roof cam would show odd viewpoints on the set and its participants. Custom-made shows allowed the audience to vote on each part of the hour what they wanted to see. The resulting shows had guests talking in high-pitched voices like they had inhaled helium. Reruns were often scoffed at by Letterman, telling the audience not to waste their time watching them. Sometimes the entire rerun would be dubbed into foreign language for rebroadcast. I remember I tuned in one night, and Dave had been revoiced by Merv Griffin, and I was like, I thought I was going crazy. Like, the rest of the episode was fine, and Merv Griffin is voicing Dave, and I'm like, what is happening here? Letterman once had a member of the audience host the show and interview guests while he left the studio. Letterman hosted the show from his house while waiting for his cable TV to be installed. Another episode was done from the production offices upstairs, as the cast claimed they were too tired to go downstairs to the studio. And of course, the top 10 list. Here's an example of a top 10 list. The top 10 excuses by the U.S. basketball team for their loss to Brazil at the Pan American Games. Number 10, had really heavy lunches. Number 9, upset about Valerie Harper leaving Valerie's show. Number 8, U.S. team often played as many as two white guys at once. Number 7, overcome by mysterious sleepiness after barrage of blow darts from Brazilian bleachers. Number 6, disturbed by pregame discovery of Brent Musburger's shrunken head in locker. Number 5, unnerved by hundreds of Hitler clones doing waves in stands. Number 4, constantly threw ball out of bounds to stop shrieking of spider monkeys. Number 3, that big liar Fred McMurray didn't come through with the promised flubber. That is so funny. Number 2, tired out from night before's mixer with gymnastic sluts. And the number 1 excuse for the U.S. basketball team for their loss to Brazil at the Pan American Games, team motto, go for the silver, not very inspiring. The top 10 list, one of the few segments carried over from Late Night to the Imposter CBS show. I don't hate Late Show with David Letterman. It just wasn't as cool. I always sum it up like this. Late Night with David Letterman, he's wearing sneakers. CBS Letterman, he's wearing Armani suits and shoes. It's that subtle difference between 12:30 and 11:30. I like the 12:30 vibe. For a long time, the top 10 lists were said to have been written in a so-called home office. There were various home offices. Mine is the first. I always remember the home office in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Some of the other home offices were in Sioux City, Iowa, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Wahoo, Nebraska. That part was eventually dropped from the bit. Late Night with David Letterman turns 40 on February 1st. I'll do another episode next Saturday about this. We'll talk about Chris Elliott. Normal episode tomorrow. Follow this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.